For at least the last 15 years, I have been doing a series of lectures. I started off with the first Wives of Kennedy, then I did six of them, and then I moved on to all the other two monarchs. And then I took a couple of versions, I hit Mary Queen of Scots for a while. They could have been considered a Tudor monarch. And I went over to Juana La Loca, who is this really interesting Spanish crazy queen. But it's been mostly focused on the Tudors of England. So the overreaching theme, however, has been that it's really been a tale of two nations. It's not just England. It's also England and Spain, because they were so intertwined all the way through this, all the way through. So here's what we have done so far. We started generally in 1485, which was when Henry VII won the crown. One of the fun things that happened was I know what day it was. The Battle of Bosworth was August 22nd. And he became king, not because he really had a good title to the crown or anything, but because he won that battle. He killed Richard III. And, a horse, my kingdom for a horse, that line is right out of the Battle of Bosworth. So when he announced his reign, he said his reign actually had started the day before, on August 21st, 1485, because he wanted anybody who had fought against him to be subject to treason. And therefore, he had leverage over them because, I could take everything you have right now, have your head chopped off because you committed treason because you fought on the wrong side. So we started here in 1485. The next significant thing was in 1492 when Isabella and Ferdinand of Spain finished the reconquest from the Moors of the Iberian Peninsula. The way they did it, they fought all the way down, and they destroyed all of the Muslim mosques and everything, just razed them right down to the ground. And then they got to the final holding city, which is Alhambra in Granada, in the southernmost point of Spain. And Isabella and Ferdinand were so cocky, they brought their children, even Catherine of Aragon, who was like 5 at the time, just that cocky to battle. Well, sure enough, the governor of Alhambra, which is a huge fort, came out and kneeled and surrendered the key. And they gave him clemency. They said, okay, we're not going to kill you. You surrendered. Good boy. And then they walked in and they said, wow, this place is really nice. Maybe we don't destroy this one. Maybe we just throw a cross on it and make it Christian. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. Well, guess who's going to Alhambra at the end of next month?
Yay.
I've been looking my whole life for it, so I'm crazy excited. Anywho, so that young girl, the child, was Henry VIII's first wife. She grows up a little bit, goes to England, marries the crown prince, who is named Arthur. They're married for 6 months. Arthur dies. She spends the next 7 years in limbo. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And finally, Henry VII, who won the battle and changed the date of his reign, he dies, and so his second son comes to the throne as Henry VIII. Henry VIII, so that was in 1509, Henry VIII becomes king. And at first, it's a glorious reign. And he's loved, good King Hal. Everybody adored him. Everything was great. And his wife kept having miscarriages. And she kept having children that died before they were even a year old. She had one girl. And then, the next 3 babies died. And then she went through menopause. And he said, I'm done with this. So he broke with Rome, because this was a huge question, whether the Pope was allowed to grant a dispensation for a man marrying his brother's widow, which is technically what his first wife was. Now that's earth-shattering, right? That's insanely crazy, because no one had ever questioned the power of the Pope before. The Pope is the God's anointed, the vicar of God. And Henry said, yeah, I don't think so. I think we believe in the Bible, what it says. And he declared himself the head of the Church of England, so that he could annul his marriage, say that dispensation that they had gotten to marry in the first place was no good, marries Anne Boleyn, who, by the way, at that point was already pregnant. How did that happen? It's one of those really short pregnancies. Anyway, so in September 9th of 1533, Elizabeth was born. 3 years later, just under 3 years, like 2 years and 8 months, her mom's head was chopped off. And it's very, very possible that was her first memory. And so the reason her mom's head was chopped off wasn't because of any of the things that of which she was convicted. It was because she never gave Henry his male heir. He wanted a male heir. He was terrified that the Tudor reigns would end with him. So then he marries the next queen and woman, and she gives him a baby, but she's dead in about a year and a half because she gets pregnant, like, well, 3 years later. She gets pregnant, and then she dies in childbirth, or immediately after childbirth. But he gets his son out of it. So meanwhile, there's some other people in there I talked about, his son, and then his, what was she, his great-niece, Lady Jane Grey, Anna, Jane of 9 days. And then there was Mary, his first child, with Catherine of Aragon. But none of that really lasted. So on November 17th, I know that date by heart because it's the day before my birthday, just in case anybody's taking notes. In 1558, Elizabeth reigned again. And she had a thing about Spain, as I may have mentioned before. Not only was her arch rival Mary married to the King of Spain while she was on the throne, but then afterwards, the King of Spain said, "Hey, you want to get married, Elizabeth?" And she's like, "You were just married to my sister. You know, what is the matter with you?" And she turned him down. But she kept him dangling for a good long time because Columbus had already gone, right? 1492, Columbus sails the ocean blue. And so in January, they take Alhambra in August or something. Columbus finds North America's. And while he's in finding America's, he finds a whole bunch of gold and gems and riches beyond worlds. He keeps sending everything back to Spain. So Spain has hyperinflation because they have all this gold, and so they're paying all kinds of money for everything. Your average people have no money at all, and the wealthiest folks just kept getting wealthier and wealthier. So at some point when the king of Spain realizes that he's not going to get to marry Elizabeth, he says, "Well, I think I'm going to declare war and turn it back into a Catholic nation." Well, meanwhile, some real famous names from history start showing up. You got Sir Francis Drake. He does the circumnavigation of the world. He finds the Spice Islands, and it's like, oh, there's some money there. More than that, Elizabeth commissions him and a bunch of other people called the Sea Dogs as privateers. Now, we would absolutely call them pirates, but they were sailing under the English flag, and therefore they were not. They weren't allowed to attack other English ships, but the Spanish and the Portuguese, knock yourself out. And these privateers were able to keep 10% of everything that they got, everything they stole from the Spanish and the Portuguese. And the crown got the other 90%. And so, of course, you got to think, maybe they weren't completely honest about how much they got, but still, 10% as a gift from Elizabeth was great. But anyway, so in 1577, Drake gets commissioned. He gets to America a couple years later. He goes to the Spice Islands. Then in 1580, the King of Spain is like, "This is crazy. She is thumbing her nose at me. She's robbing me blind every time she gets. She says it's not her, but we know it's her." And so he goes to the Pope, who is his second cousin, and he says, "Hey, what can you do?" And he said, "Well, we've already excommunicated her. We've already freed anybody who has taken an oath of allegiance to her. They're gone. They don't have to be allegiance to her. What I'm going to do here, it's now 1580, I'm going to say, okay, anybody who kills or otherwise removes Elizabeth, the illegitimate ruler of England, it's not a sin. You don't even have to ask for forgiveness for it because it's not a sin to kill her." All right, so that's ramping things up quite a bit. So then when it really kicked in was 7 years later. She's living under this death threat, right? She's super paranoid. She's looking at everybody. Food tasters, there were people who would poison her clothes because certain things can get through the skin. And so she would have other people try on her clothes before she'd put them on. Just a horrible way to exist, right? I don't care how rich you are. It's a horrible way to exist. So then in 1587, she finally kills Mary, Queen of Scots, who was, of course, the great Catholic hope. That's 1587, 1588. Guess what? The Spanish Armada is coming. This is where we left off last time. The Spanish Armada came for a whole bunch of different reasons. It failed miserably, almost bankrupted the country of Spain because there was a whole bunch of reasons why they lost, the Spanish Armada lost. But there was also a big storm that came. And when they were in retreat, the storm came and they crashed in Scotland and in Ireland. And the Irish initially killed them and they went, oh no, wait, you're Catholic too? Okay. And that's where the Black Irish come from, by the way, in case you didn't know that. Okay. So Elizabeth looks at this and goes, huh, well that's proof that God loves me. And she took all of the planning and the maneuverability of the keels of the ships of the English and the lighter, all that gets pushed aside, and it turns into, because God sends a storm to, propaganda, right? So, after this amazing victory, Drake, Sir Francis Drake, he commissions a painting to be done called the Armada Portrait, and this is Elizabeth. Now, I gave you each a copy of this because there's some details in here that I really want you to see. I have an extra. Everybody have one? Okay, so first off, it's very, very flattering. All right, that is not what she looked like. She'd been wearing lead paint for like 35 years on her skin. Her skin was eaten up. She'd lost all of her teeth because she had a sweet tooth and she ate sugar like candy. and she was much, much more haggard and everything. But if you look closely, you can see out of this window, what is that? This side, that's the Spanish Armada. It is broken up, it's in storms, it's in darkness, it's trash. You can look on the other side, and that's the English ship. And the sun's shining, and the birds are singing, and it's all wonderful and good. When she initially sat for this, because she only sat for it once, this crown over here underneath the window of the English had been over here on the left, because it's the imperial crown from the Holy Roman Empire, which is part of the Spanish thing. It should be over here where the Spanish are. She picked it up and moved it, and she said, no, I want this to be depicting I have control of the empires that be. On top of that, she's got her right hand is sitting on the globe, and if you'll note, she's holding on to North America. She's claiming it. This is where I'm going next, kids. This is mine now. She has decimated, she didn't, but yeah, God did, decimated the Spanish fleet, so the oceans are hers, all hers. She's got the biggest navy in the world. She's got all the power. Spain is going to take years to rebuild to get anywhere. This is the coming of age of Elizabeth. She is now queen of all she surveys, right? So there's a bunch of other stuff here. So the pearls all indicate virginity, a ladylike virginity. And right here, where you would normally have a codpiece for a man on the king, instead she's got a big old pearl sitting there. Ain't getting there, honey. Nope, not going through there. It's a proclaiming over and over and over again that she is the virgin queen. She is Gloriana herself. And it was this portrait that started her name of Gloriana. That's when people started calling her Gloriana. Now, there were three of these that were commissioned, and there are three different courtiers. There are three different ones still in existence. One of them came down through the Drake family, one of them came down from the Switzfields or something, and the other one's in the National Museum of London. But they're all slightly different, and this is the one where she looks the best, that's why I use this one. Okay, so this is the quintessential experience of Elizabeth. When she finished with the Spaniards, the world became hers. The expression, the sun never sets on the English Empire, you've probably heard that. That was originally about the Spanish Empire. When that first came about, it was the sun never set on the Spanish Empire, and it was true until the Armada. And then it became true of England, and it's been true of England pretty much ever since. So that was in 1588. That was considered to be her greatest military achievement. That's the one where she said, I may have the body of a weak and feeble woman, but I have the heart and stomach of a king, and a king of England too, who was rallying the troops. She was wearing white and a breastplate, and she was on a white. Imagine how amazing that is. Like, she's got the super white skin. She's dressed in white. She's got the silver. Her horse is a white stallion. It's all armored up in silver as well. She's on a hilltop with the sunshine. She must have just been like glowing and glittering. And she's saying that to the people, the soldiers, that whether I live or die, I'm here with you today. But that's what she said, and she stirred the souls of those fighters, and they all fell madly in love with her as if they weren't in love with her already. It was an earthquake of political magnitude. She was brilliant in this. Fine. So they like her. So that was in August of 1588. In September, a month later, not even a month later, her all-time favorite, Robert Dudley, died. And that had been her boyfriend when she was a little girl before anything. It had been her companion. It's the guy that his wife mysteriously fell down the stairs and suddenly he was able to get married. He had married her cousin eventually when he could realize he couldn't get her. And he died. So it was like the greatest and worst year of her friggin' life. Sorry about that. I was almost cussing. Okay, so the very next year, Shakespeare's first play is written. All of a sudden, everything opens up, and the Elizabethan era, in its greatest entity-wise, comes to an existence. Not only was that somebody who was there, I've already told you Drake was around. You got Raleigh was around at this point, and Francis Bacon. All of these people were great Elizabethans that really shone after the fall of the Spain in it. So these two countries, of course, were inextricably linked to one another. In 1600, so 12 years later, she establishes, or allows to be established, the East Indian Trading Company, the people you hear about in Pirates of the Caribbean and everywhere else. Hugely influential company, massively successful. It really was hearkening the golden age. When she died in 1601, so the next year after that, she, Parliament was mad at her because she had some monopolies that she created and they wanted her to drop them and there was going to be a big old fight. And instead of having the fight, she sent them over a letter and said, yeah, okay, I'll do it. I'll do what you want. That's fine. Because I don't want you telling me what I can and can't do, so I'll just capitulate. Okay. So then they said, well, we want to express our gratitude. She says, fine, come to Greenwich. So 141 members of the House of Commons come to Greenwich, and there she gives her third of her magical trio speech. This is called the Golden Speech, and I'm not going to read the whole thing to you, don't worry, but here's what she said, part of what she said. I'm going to skip that one too. Okay, I assume that you came here to give me thanks. And I would certainly prize that. But loyalty, love, and thanks, I account them as invaluable. There is no jewel, be it of never so high a price, which I set above this jewel, and I mean your love. It is not my desire to live or reign longer than my life and reign shall be for your good. And though you have had me, and may have, many higher and mightier and wiser princes sitting in this seat, nor shall you ever have any that love you better. Grown men crying at the idea that the queen, who is anointed by God, is humbling herself and saying, my whole existence is so that I can serve you and have your love, and that's what I really care about. Anyway, I just love that. So there were some other things that happened in her reign. She cut off a bunch of people's heads. You know, she had a boyfriend who was the guy I was just talking about, whose wife fell down the stairs. His maybe step, probably real, son, she had an affair with him, maybe. But she cut his head off too because he had a nervous breakdown and went crazy and tried to remove her from the throne. She started the whole push towards having a foothold, in, an actual foothold, not just going and taking the goods, but having a foothold in North America. She encouraged Raleigh, and that's where we got tobacco and potatoes, baby. She also did not hate slavery. She said, fine, you can't sell or buy or sell Englishmen. But, you know, those other people, they're not really people anyway. She's, you know, wildly racist, and she was super vain, and she was, and she was, and she was. It was the end of her reign, however, that ended, and this is historically accurate, right? They stopped counting the Middle Ages in 1603 when she died. The day she died was the end of the Middle Ages. Up until that point, there were people would identify as, I'm a Yorkist, I'm with the Lancastrians, I'm a Londoner, I'm not a farmer. They identified where they were and to whom they were loyal. For the first time, they were all loyal, not only to the queen, but to the nation. To the nation. And that's where patriotism is born. That's where our modern times began. And it was another thing that came about as her death. Was, of course, she didn't have any kids, so who are we going to get to be the next king? And the only person left was James VI of Scotland, who was a distant relative of Elizabeth. And so he became James I of England, James VI of Scotland. Hence, we now have a united kingdom for the first time. You know, they'd been at battle all the time. So the heralding that she did of a new age was beyond remarkable. It's very, very hard to come up with something that is of equal import in Western civilization anyway. So a couple of fun conspiracy theories. Because she was brilliant, she was a strategist, she spoke 7 languages fluently, she was great at playing other people, she was a master manipulator, she was all that. A lot of people said, she's also tall and thin and athletic and has a lot of energy. She's probably a man. And so that's why she's a virgin. That's why she didn't have any kids, because she was actually a man. I'm not kidding. So that's one of my favorite conspiracy theories. But there's tons of other ones. You know, who's how are they actually related? So, okay, the propaganda, I got that. Elizabeth Rain, this, fine. So man or a woman, and then, what was that? Oh. Some people believe that Francis Bacon was actually her son. There's actually some evidence that supports that. So over these last many, many years, we have gone into the private lives of these people kind of intrusively, and maybe not with as much respect as I should have, but it's not too soon. So I have an abiding love and interest, in case you couldn't tell, in this subject, because there's so much intrigue and backstabbing and shifting of loyalties and treacherous behavior and all these people just trying to maintain their position. So, there was something wrong here. But it was because of Elizabeth that there was the tolerance for people, including the Puritans. When that ended, guess what? We got on a boat and came over here and we landed at Plymouth Rock, right? I mean, it was. She was such a monumental person in history. Anyway, so the one thing I did want to share with you is this is something that I got when I was in New Orleans last November. And I walked into a coin store and I called my husband and I said, oh my God. I was just, that coin store you and I went to a long time ago, and they have a coin from Henry VIII's reign. And he said, and when you left, did they still have it? I said, no. So, it's called a grout. And it is actually a coin that was used as, people of that age actually touched this thing, right? I mean, that's the whole concept of history. This is called the gold nose because it was raised in relief of Henry VIII. This was minted while he was married to his 6th wife, Catherine Parr. But because when people touched it, it would rub off the good metal on top and expose the base metal underneath, and it left this gold mark on it because the nose was sticking out.
Is that what's on there?
Yep. Anyway, I really do appreciate all of these years you guys listening to me and my stories, even half of them are made up. And I do want to know if there's anything in particular that you would ever want to hear from me. And if not, that's fine. Besides silence. And if not, that's fine. Anyway, that's all. That was it. Oh, cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so the next bunch of people after when James the First of England, who was also James the Sixth of Scotland, he's a pretty interesting character, right? He was universally hated. Everybody, people in Scotland hated him. People in England hated him. Everybody hated him. And then his brother. Yeah, I don't know, because I don't do Stuart England, I do Tudor England, right? But one of them got his head chopped off, and then you had the Cromwellian Glorious Revolution. But I think that's nowhere near as cool as people getting all dressed up and marrying a whole bunch of different people. And cause okay, we need to turn this off.
Okay.
My darling.
Why don't we continue on from this point forward? If that